I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
this
sucks less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
title
fight level
leader of the Headlock Squad.
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So, first off, I just wanted to thank you guys for checking out last week's episode. I had a lot of people give me feedback on the episode, and had a lot of people reach out about helping finish the course that we were doing. And so we can talk a little more about that maybe in the outro of this episode. Just kind of wanted to get into today's episode. I have a really good one for you, a little longer than we typically do. I don't know. We've been doing more 90-minute interviews. But it is, again, a 90-minute interview. It's in person, and it is with the head coaches, the owners of Revive Jiu-Jitsu. I tell you guys about it all the time. It's probably pretty infamous for podcast listeners for, you know, tough training. And you'll hear just in the first couple minutes how we talk to each other about training with the goal of trying to injure each other. And you guys will see what I mean about that intensity and why I love going there. But that being said, we are going to have in the middle of the interview, we're going to have a deal for you on Nick Sanders' most recent instructional. And so you guys will like what I have to tell you on the commercial today. But besides that, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this conversation. It's just a really big range. We went in with the idea that we were going to just talk kind of competition and competition stories, but we really do put a lot of focus into the evolution of jiu-jitsu. Not like, man, jiu-jitsu's so different and we're upset about it, but jiu-jitsu is so different, and this is how we deal with that as people that have trained for, all of us have trained over 15 years, and so, and in different areas too. And so, we really do have a lot of perspective when it comes to where jiu-jitsu is now and where it was 15 years ago. And again, just how to deal with that as a coach and even a student. And so I think you guys are really going to like today's episode. I won't ramble on too much. Let's go ahead and get into today's interview with Junior and Nick.
We've been recording the whole time. Oof.
All right. Nick, Junior, how are you guys doing today?
Doing good, man.
I'm doing great.
Yeah, yeah.
Feel like since I've been on dad duty, haven't been around very often, haven't seen you guys a lot, missed you guys.
Yeah, he's been dodging the training.
Yeah, we miss you, man. I can't wait to beat you up.
Yeah, I know you can't. Speaking of, like, remember when you were like, oh, Josh, you should have a baby. It would be so much fun. You would love it. That was messed up, dude.
I remember when you tore my groin, my baby just born.
It was a long play. That was the long play.
I couldn't sleep for months. And I went to train at Watson. I wanted to roll light, and you did a crazy knee cut. It hurt me.
So I've always like...
Payback's coming.
I feel like when it comes to injuries, it's like you tucked your chin in the rear naked choke and your chin got hurt, right? It's like you tried to reverse De La Hiva, my knee cut. That seems like it's your problem. You know, that seems like it's not on me.
Man, I don't know.
I don't know. But
you got to have respect for the groin area.
Yeah.
Man.
Dude, it toughened his groin up.
The other one got blown out like a week later.
Yeah.
So then, therefore, he just has a weak groin.
Think so?
Yeah. Like if you got an injury on both sides, it's probably just muscular weakness.
The first time I had a surgery, couple of days before that, I went there to drill. The second time, I just had a baby, and I went there to train light. Bro, you're not sleeping well at night, and you're going to come back to Revive, and that will hurt you. And Nick's going to help me, and you're going to take your pants off again.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Yep.
That was, yeah, that, you know, I never bring up that Nick almost ended my career with an overhead sweep.
Well, I was tired of getting submitted.
And then as soon as my shoulder is destroyed, he's like, let's get his pants off.
Yeah.
You know, it'll help him. He's in shock.
Restrictive clothing. You gotta loosen the restrictive clothing. That's all it was.
I was new here. I was like, man, Americans are crazy. That's
how we do it in St. Louis.
We don't do that in Brazil. Somebody gets hurt, to take their pants off.
Somebody gets hurt in Brazil, you just roll them outside.
Yeah, throw them outside. Gutter.
Yeah, it's the best way to do it.
You probably don't have to worry about getting sued, though, in Brazil.
No,
you know?
Nobody sues anybody.
In America, you got to worry about that, dude.
You Americans are crazy.
That is true. So on that topic, I thought the best place that we could start this podcast, and there's so many places we could start, would be, is jiu-jitsu American or Brazilian?
Oh, wow.
Ooh, man, that's a rough one.
Wow.
Backstory for everybody who doesn't know, Junior and I are business partners. Yeah, he's Brazilian, I'm American.
Well, but Junior's also business partners until this conversation.
But I will say this, Junior is now an American citizen.
I am American.
So you're teaching American jiu-jitsu?
I don't know if you.
I think we just teach jiu-jitsu, right?
Teach jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Oh, come on.
A lot of people call my gym asking for Brazilian jiu-jitsu when they're white belt. And then they start training, they get the blue belt, purple belt, and they hear Nick Sanders talking. They're like, guess what? I'm doing American jiu-jitsu now. And they keep doing the same thing. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. You know, like my Revive coffee. It's from my dad's farm in Brazil. Nick Sanders already calls this American coffee.
Only when I sold to veterans.
Was roasted in America. Yeah.
That's veterans, true. Yeah. It is roasted in America.
It's all about how you phrase it.
Man, that's...
We have a...
that's a pretty racy topic right there.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got into Revive Coffee already. You know, it was like when I interviewed Robert Arias and he kept name dropping Arias Bros Jiu-Jitsu on me.
You got to put the plugs in.
You got to. So let's open up with what is Revive Coffee? Because I was talking to my father-in-law trying to explain to him why it is different. And he was like, what do you mean? I don't understand. So what makes the green coffee, what makes it different?
So I started the coffee business because of my dad. He does like commodity coffee, normal coffee. You get like every bean out of the tree, like green beans, ripe beans, bad beans, fungus, or everything on that tree. They rip out of that tree. They dry in the floor with animals walking over it. They don't care. And they dry the coffee, sell it, comes to Central America, anywhere. There's a lot of people doing specialty coffee now. It's a huge movement. They also pay better, the farmers, for this type of coffee. It's where you only get the ripe, the best cherries. You dry them in a raised bed, and you send to another country or in Brazil, and people pay better for that and taste better. You guys know, you guys tried this coffee. And I spoke to one of my dad's neighbor, and he was doing that type of coffee. He's like, you should convince your daddy, maybe teach him. So I came back to America and like, I want to do this. I want to help my father. And I got hooked up with the guys Upshot in St. Charles, and they were great. They taught me a lot. So I was like, oh, I'm going to get some really good coffee and bring to America. And that's what I did. I got this container, like a lot of coffee, you know, and I'm selling coffee to roasters or selling at the gym for my friends. And I love the coffee business, you know.
And I will, as much as I love to trash talk you, I will say that coffee is substantially better than any coffee that I've had. You know, is just always is. It is a. It feels like a different product when you drink coffee that is, I guess, it's ripe. Is the difference, and it's not over roasted because you're able to not have to roast it so much because it's ripe. But yeah, absolutely love the Revive coffee.
It's because it's roasted in America.
It's because they roast. I've never had it. Do you have any batches that are roasted in Brazil so we can compare them?
I'll bring some next time I come.
Do they even, can they even roast coffee in Brazil?
They can, yeah. Not as good as America because we're the best.
Like
America's the best.
Like the jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah, like the jiu-jitsu.
Look, I will say this. I started off with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And the only reason why I say American Jiu-Jitsu is kind of piss off some of the Brazilians.
I know.
And, that, and that's the reason why is because I was getting screwed over at tournaments. You know, I was always losing these refs decisions, so it's like, yeah, whatever. But in reality, it's just Jiu-Jitsu to me. That's what it is.
You know what I found is one of the best ways to win referees' decisions in the IBJJF is to put AJJ on the back of your gi. You know?
Think so?
You know, I don't know. Anytime Nick is in a match and I'm coaching him and the score is tied, I'm always yelling, "You're down by an advantage, Nick. You're down by an advantage."
You should do that, yeah, because the only way to win ref's decision is win by points. That's how mm-hmm. it is. Or submission.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You can't leave it like, oh, man, especially the big tournaments. Mm-hmm. You go against a Brazilian who big name out there. You're going to lose every single time. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Yeah, some of those old school guys always gets the referee decision, right? Also, yeah. If you fight Lovato, they're going to give it to him.
Because he's famous. Yeah. Yeah.
That's I compete against other Brazilians, too. Twice, I was sure I won, and the referee gave to the guy. So it's pretty upset.
You know, and I don't want to claim that there is anything nefarious that goes on, but I will say, you know, a great highlight, I think, from the tag team perspective, all three of us being coaches on tag team, was us winning the first St. Louis Open. Because for us, it was like there are a lot of teams that were, you know, going for the team title. It's the first time they're doing it in our city. And we definitely were like, we want to win this. We want to show out. And there was actually a point when I was coaching somebody and there were 2 points they should have gotten. And I yell, you know, I even call the referee professor, you know, nothing. I'm not getting anything, trying to do it. And then I literally say, "Junior, say what I said in Portuguese." And he said it. And I assume that's what he said. He might have just been like, "Hey, you know, this is my buddy." I don't know what he said. But then the ref gave us the 2 points. And so there's something there.
I always try to throw out there when there's an advantage. I'm like, "Hey, ref, advantage.
Advantage."
just so maybe
professor,
they think,
"Yeah, advantage."
But that was a good day.
We won, yeah.
Our team did great, and you got the trophies are revived. You can't touch it.
Got the trophies.
People are still calling me to get the trophy.
And then the same thing, Kansas City Open. We won that one, too. On the very last match of the day, one of Devin's purple belts, I think, won the whole thing on the very last match. In the absolute, it was a featherweight. You were there, right?
Yeah.
He was like a featherweight or a lightweight. It'd be like an ultra heavy in the finals of the absolute. It was awesome.
Have you guys ever, until now, have you guys ever been part of a team that wins opens, you know, wins the...
No.
The team trophy?
Tag team.
I've never, I mean, when it was me and Kyle, like, we were never even competing for team trophies. And it's so much fun to, you know, for every match to matter, you know, especially as a coach, when you're, you know, I'm coaching Revive guys, you guys are coaching Head Nod guys. We're just, who cares? We're just trying to get team points.
We're a team for real. And that's the cool thing about IBJJF. I know a lot of people don't like IBJJF, but it's so hard to win a team trophy or even like a tournament. You go like to any black belt division is purple belt, adult, or even master is so tough, and see a lot of people just give up and start talking bad about it. But
I hate, like, so I'm pretty passionate about that. As much as I get pissed off at the IBJJF refs decisions,
mm-hmm.
they're still the number one organization in the world. Everybody's on this like no gi versus gi, ADCC versus IBJJF. Like, honestly, we wouldn't have the jiu-jitsu popularity we have if it weren't for IBJJF, Naga, Grappler's Quest.
Yeah.
And those are some names you don't hear anymore, the latter two. But, like, ADCC wasn't around. That wasn't like a – it was around, but it wasn't like a super big thing. You got the DVDs, you know, 2 mm-hmm. months later. The ones really pushing grappling in America was Naga and Grappler's Quest. Those were huge for the American scene. And then when IBJJF came here in 07, because before that, we were all watching at the Tujika Tennis Club where they had the Worlds. And, you know, it was like, oh, man, like everybody wanted to go down there and compete. When they moved it to America, I feel like jiu-jitsu just, like really, really, really exploded. Mm-hmm. And then they started doing the Nogi tournaments. But yeah, I don't like when people bash on the IBJJF. For as much as they suck for a lot of things, they're still the best organization with the best grapplers in the world.
Nobody that wins IBJJF stuff bashes the IBJJF. No. It's always people that lose.
Yeah, lose or don't do it because they're too scared or, you know, though they say stuff, you know. I don't know.
I've been coaching for many years, and I met a lot of guys, and I coach a lot of guys that couldn't win IBJJF or couldn't win a match, and they just start bad-mouthing or gave up. Like, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. Let's go do a small tournament here in town and, you know. Is your way out.
The saying is like, if you can't win a IBJJF or if you're not going to get promoted to the next belt, just start doing Nogi. And then you could just go do a Fuji or an AGF, and then you know, the belts don't matter at that point, I guess.
And yeah, and when you see that, like, it, you know, not even to bash any other tournament, people always try to compare, oh, this tournament is going to take over. And I see different people, especially on Facebook, that are like pushing it. And these are like coaches of like big organizations that are like, yeah, the IBJJF is going down. It's going to be this or that. And they'll point out, they'll be like, look at this one tournament, this one weekend every 4 months that draws almost 1,000 competitors or draws 1,000 competitors. Right. Like, bro, IBJJF has 4 tournaments in 4 countries this same weekend. You cannot tell. We are not the same.
They're all pulling 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. Every one of those tournaments has 1,000 people. Like, they just were ADCC Open, which is awesome. I'm glad they're starting to do it. I don't want to bash ADCC either. I'm glad there's competition. I want that. It's going to make the sport better overall. They had 1,600 people at the Austin Open. That's like day 2 at the Pans.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's 5,000 competitors at the Worlds of the Pans. So it's like, I'm glad they're there. I'm glad they're doing it. But the people that are saying, oh, ADCC is going to take over, IBJJF sucks, very short-sighted. And I think the more tournaments, the better, because it gets the word out. You get the, if you don't want to do an IBJJF or there's not one close to you on a particular weekend and ADCC is, go do it. That's awesome. I think that's great. And I really think it's silly that people are trying to make gi versus no gi or like ADCC versus IBJJF an actual thing. It's just silly.
And on top of that, there is, as a competitor, you know, we've all competed for a long time. I would argue that there is nothing more fun as a competitor than trying to be ranked in your age weight belt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's in the only ranking system that is actually realistic is the IBJJF.
Yes.
Right? You know, if you go win Purple Belt Master 4 Worlds, you know you are probably in, you know, the best guy in your division at that age and at that belt. And you just cannot say that with any other division. You know, like, people will drive to whatever and be like, oh, I went to Naga Worlds. I'm a world champion. Like, no, you're not. Come on.
I mean, people.
Yeah.
You're a Naga World Champion.
Exactly. And so, you know, and getting to kind of chase that has been so much fun. Do you guys have, you know, it doesn't even have to be 2023, but just over the last bit of time that we've been doing a lot of tournaments, do you have any highlights, anything that you think back to that, like, oh, this was a really awesome thing? Obviously, for me, brought up winning the St. Louis Open. As silly as it is, even though we've probably won bigger tournaments than that.
But that was the biggest for us. That's our hometown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else matters when they come into St. Louis. You got to win. You got to represent. I was going to compete. I was going to make my wife compete. I told my mom to put a white belt and go there and fight for us. Everybody's fighting. People at my gym knows.
All
you know?
The points count, yeah.
I went around my gym and asked guys, like, you want to compete? I'm going to help you get ready. If they say no, I told them, you dead to me.
Yeah, go try a head nod.
Yeah, you don't want head nod. Those guys do whatever they want, not here.
I think St. Louis Open was a good one, but I think the 2020 tournament run was awesome, and I think it was also awesome for Revive because we got like 6 Pan Am champions and a couple world champions just out of that 1 year, and it was our first full year being open. So that 2020 run, it was right after COVID. I think I had won the Pans, both gi and no gi, got second at Master Worlds. won Nogi Worlds. That run was like, that was my best run.
That was a really fun time to compete too, because divisions were smaller, but they were so elite. It was like, okay, maybe I would normally have a 10 to 16 guy division, and I'm having 8 to 6 guys, but these 8 to 6 guys are the best guys. And so it was really fun during, you know, I was doing a lot of competing too during like kind of through COVID, and just getting to see those same faces. I fought Yago Souza twice, and it was like, dang, dude, this is crazy.
Where's he at, by the way? What's he even doing?
He, you know, he hung his hat on beating me down a few times and was like, I think
we got second at Pan's the Tynan,
and then that was the last time you saw him.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Maybe he gave up because Gi's dead, so
probably doing American Jiu-Jitsu
somewhere, you know? In Brazil. He barely lost to Tynan too. Mm-hmm. I think it was like
he had advantage. His back in the end, one hook on, something like that. Yeah,
it was close. It was a good match.
Josh almost broke his leg. So.
I don't remember that, but I like what you're saying. You know, I remember. I think back to also doing the, you know, for me a really special one was, I think it was 2022 Indianapolis Open, and it was because, was it Indianapolis? Might have been Memphis. Regardless, it was the tournament that Watson competed Gi and Nogi, and one is Nogi division.
It was Indianapolis.
Yeah. Okay, so that one, because you know, at the time for us as a team, I think we had probably won Chicago Open, but like, you know, we're just there helping our boy Mark Vives
out when we're tournament.
It's like, you know, he's got such a huge presence of his team alone. But like going to a place that we don't have any schools in the area. And, I think I want to say we had half the competitors as some of the bigger schools. And we came in, I think I was injured. I think Junior was injured. I think I had probably tore his groin or something.
That was probably after.
And so, we're not competing, and it's just like, hey, well, we're going to coach every match. And as we were doing it, we really stayed neck and neck and really were doing great in the team points. We ended up the next day when they did the white belt divisions, we had like two white belts competing. And that was like, that's the problem with not having any local schools, is you won't get a lot of white belts to travel. And then we ended up losing by a couple points. We get second. As soon as we get second, Junior starts just roasting our guys. Like, they worked so hard. And he starts individually pointing out, like, you did not stay for your open class. You know, you sucked yesterday.
And you got to let them know. You got to let them know.
Got to toughen them up.
Somebody got to tell them.
Is this a good coach?
But it's the fact that like that one, we were so close. I really feel like for us, it was like, oh, we can win in any city, you know, if we bring our team.
Bring the crew.
And so that was a super cool experience too.
Is that what we're doing for Memphis? Because I'm starting to push it. Like,
yeah.
Memphis Open.
I think we're all doing Memphis, right?
Yeah. I'm doing it.
Yeah. Watson just told me. I just interviewed Watson and my dad, and Watson just said that he's doing Memphis.
He wants to do no gi.
He wants to do no gi.
Just tell him to do gi.
He said his arm is not that good anymore.
Let him sacrifice himself.
To him. He's your boy.
Okay.
Yeah. Tell
him
he's got to do gi too.
Dude, he's you're the Brazilian Kyle Watson. He's your boy.
The ladies call me that. So. Yeah, I'll talk to him. Maybe he'll listen to me this time. If he understands me, he listens to me.
That's true.
Most of the time, he doesn't understand
me. He just nods his head.
He does not listen to anybody. Yeah. He'll listen to me when I coach him, you know? Uh-huh. Sometimes, you know? Every little bit, he will. But yeah, he doesn't, you know, he likes to follow his own path. Yeah.
I think he would do just fine. And because his no-gi game transfers well into his gi game. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he'd have to worry about much with grips and whatnot.
Yeah, he had a big surgery. So.
Nah, that's fine. He'll be fine. No, don't worry about that, bro.
Nick will be cranking to the arm. The day he put his gi on, Nick, like, Jim down.
That gi, so Kyle Watson is the only person that I go against. Well, I shouldn't say the only, because when I go against you, Josh, I'm just like, okay, just don't let him get chest-to-chest connection. If I go with Junior, don't let him get dogfight.
Yep.
Or the crazy dog.
Don't let him get my lapel.
Yeah. Don't let him grab lapel. Kyle, it's don't let him body lock.
Yeah.
And the last time we trained together, no gi, I ended up body locked and it was miserable.
He'll hurt your lower back.
Yeah. It crushes you. I'm like, how is somebody so strong at this age?
Yeah. I always like to see too, like, you will lock him in some of the tightest stuff in the world, and he will just straight up not tap to it. Oh, man. He'll just straight up eat it.
That's why he got the surgery.
He was like, yeah, they did an ultrasound on my elbow, and he's like, there's bone spurs in it, and this is torn and that's torn. Like, yeah, dude, maybe you should tap every once in a while. Like, oh, it doesn't hurt.
Crazy guy.
Not anymore. It probably hurt in the beginning. He just fought through it. Now it's just like locks out, so it doesn't bother him anymore.
It got numb. So for you guys, are there any things as, let's say as competitors first, but we can even expand to as coaches, that over the last 3+ years now of just competing a lot and getting our guys to compete a lot, that you guys have learned that were like kind of big moments of like, oh, this seems to matter. I didn't really realize, or even just ways of changing training or anything like that.
So, I mean, one big thing I really realized is focused training is important. So, like, I made myself with lower belts or people I knew I can beat. I have to focus on certain positions or certain passes to get the live reps in. I know we talk about that every now and then. It's like it's a live rep. Going against black belts is just survive. You know, try to implement the game. So, quality training, and then. And when you want to be the best, you can't dodge hard rounds. Like, you have to have hard rounds. Those are the two big, in the training aspect, eye-opening things. It's like, all right, I was training hard, but kind of get an off round here or there, or wasn't really pushing myself to, like, push the pace from the starting bell to the ending bell. So when I started really taking it seriously again, that was one big one, like push, score last every round. I don't care if you're down by 10 points, score last. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. And then, seeking out hard rounds. Excuse me. Those are the big ones that in the training field. And then training partners matter. Like, they matter so much. Me getting rounds in with, a white belt just kind of floating around, that's not a quality round. That's a warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be seeking out you, Matt Green, Kyle, Junior, Josh Onkel, Little Eric, like all these black belts. If I want to get better and be prepared for tournaments, I got to really push myself with them. And then in the tournament scene, mental visualization was huge. Jeff, when he was in town, he got me on that. And so I visualized before every tournament, showing up to the tournament, doing my warm up, walking out to the bullpen, getting weighed in, going out to the mat, winning all my matches, get my hand raised, and I just visualize it over and over and over and over again. So mental visualization and mental prep was huge. And then, just getting there, immersing myself into the environment. I like to get there like 2-3 hours early and just take in all the sounds, get all the nerves out, get a good warm-up in. And then also, I would tell myself, this is probably the biggest thing for the actual competition was, it's just another day. Mm-hmm. This is literally just like open mat. Like, if Lovato were to come to Revive tomorrow, I wouldn't be scared to roll with him. I just go roll with him,
mm-hmm.
right? And so when you don't refrain from going, like, giving it your all, and if you don't play too tight and you actually go out there and do it, you have much, much, much better results. I think that's the biggest ones I've learned.
Man, that's a lot of good stuff, bro.
Yeah. With tournaments, I think, like, usually people – I think there's a lot of information nowadays. That's me. I think there's a lot of new things to do all the time, and I see a lot of my guys jumping around. They don't become, great or anything. I try to get my game, like, just stick with some things I do well and make it better. Maybe add things that will connect close to what I'm already doing it. I think that helped me a lot because I changed my game a lot in the last few years. I used to be into being fast, try speed pass. It was a lightweight, weigh, you know, 160. I'm 180 now. I'm a pretty strong guy, way bigger than Josh. So I think that that's something that I think people, if you have a hard time with your jiu-jitsu, I think that will help you try to stick maybe with the game that your gym already does, what your gym does well, be great at that, you know. Another thing I see, guys that are like, by coaching Nick in tournaments, and I coach other guys that don't win, it's like, if you have a game plan, I know what he wants to do. You go around and start telling him, or like, man, this guy's going to do this, stick with that. He listens, and he's like, okay, that's the game. I'm going to win by doing that. He does, you know, he believes on his game, and he gets it done, and I think that's a big thing, you know.
Yeah, I think that's huge, is like believing in your game. Like, my game plan in the finals at Panza, when you were there coaching me, was a pull guard. And you're like, hey, this guy likes to pull guard. And I was like, thank God, because my leg's destroyed. So I'm like, change the game plans. I'll let him pull and I'll pass. So I had confidence in my jiu-jitsu, top or bottom. So I, like, just because the game plan changed doesn't mean I'm not going to beat the guy. So,
and what's interesting, too, is like, game plan for a lot of people, I think they assume that game plan is going to be like, okay, you're going to go for your single leg, and then if it's not there, you're going to switch and start going for double legs, and then if it's not there, you're going to go for a collar drag. It's like, no, it's not that.
Think broader.
Yeah, game plan is, I'm going to try to play top. I'm going to wrestle this guy. Or this guy's wrestling is really good. I need to connect to him and pull guard.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
I'm going to sweep early. You know, just like simple things. And I look back to, like, you know, all those matches of that we've had, we've all coached each other a lot of different times at this point. And there's a lot of trust in the coach, whoever's coaching, even though it's like, you know, we'll be switching back and forth. It's just like, it's hard to be, as an athlete, to be in that perspective of like, this is what is best for me. Because as an athlete, you got to believe that you're going to do anything. Right. Yep. You're going to believe like, OK, I'm going to win at every position, no matter where we go. But as a coach, you go, OK, this is the best avenue to win.
Yeah.
And just having those simple, you know, and we changed your game plan a lot that tournament because you got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, you know, you see that it seems to make such a difference, though, to have a simple enough game plan that can actually be followed.
I think we did that, too, in St. Louis for you. Because we were talking about your guy and you want to have a specific game plan. Uh-huh. And you fought him twice. And the second one, I'm like, man, just go fucking smash him. Just go out there and just go smash. Like,
smash
you. Yeah, it's like, because you were like, the first one you pulled, you were going to put 50-50 and everything. And then the second one, I was like, just go out there and smash. And that's exactly what happened. You broke him. It was good.
Sometimes the best game plan is just do jiu-jitsu, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like you have... You know, it's not always, that's not always a game plan you can go in with.
No.
But when you just are like, hey, I think you have better jiu-jitsu than this guy, don't overthink it. You know, just go grapple. You would not overthink it if you were in the gym.
Well, some other things too you got to think about, like that people really don't talk about a whole lot that I really focus on is strategy. Like, there is a strategy to the game. If you're a really good wrestler, judo guy, man, back up and play the corners. You know, play the edges. If you mess up a throw, run out of bounds a little bit. You act like you're taking them down. Okay, start again, back up to the edges, and do it again. So that's a strategy in and of itself. If you go against, you know, a good strategy I use for the big boys is double collar grips, and I just try to, like, snap down, but I'm really just, like, keeping them away from my legs and trying to do anything until they pull, right, or until I can get a clean pull. So there are some strategies, circling, playing the edges, but man, the last tournament, Nashville Open, I went against a lightweight, and he had an amazing guard, so I pulled on him first. We did double guard pull. I knew he was going to get the advantage because a lot of people, when you do double guard pull, a strategy is to come and get the advantage. Fell right into a sweep, and I got on top and smashed. So strategy is important. I think it's really not talked about a lot is strategy. And the other thing, too, is, like I just said with jiu-jitsu, you just got to believe you're better than that person. Like, if you worry about what they're going to do, you're not going to get off what you're going to do. And so, you know, some of the competitors at our gym worry too much about, well, they're good at this, they're good at that. And my answer is, like, I don't give a shit what they're good at. What are you good at?
Yeah.
Go out there and play your game. They're never going to get off their game if you do what you're going to do.
So, just be first, right?
Like, be first. Like
Bob said.
Just like
Bob. You're not first, you're last.
You're last.
It's true.
That's if you don't get going first. Right there.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, this is something that, like, I have always noticed, I think I've noticed it more with training with you. You know, I think we're all in agreement that jiu-jitsu is jiu-jitsu. But Brazilians understand strategy in a way that Americans don't seem to most of the time. Most Americans, they like to put something extra on the match of, oh, well, I'm always hunting for the submission or something along those lines. And it's idiotic. We're fighting under a very specific rule set. The goal is to win that match, right? Because you can I get a lot more opportunities to submit people if I get deeper into the tournament. But if I lose in the first round because I was so I had put some other thought of what winning actually was. No, winning is getting your hand raised at the end. And that was something that I just know that, like, Junior, you've helped me with so much as a competitor is just like, no, just do this. This, you'll win. You know, you'll win this way. This is, oh, this guy has a huge hole in his game. Just go exploit that. You know, even if it's not what you play as much, like, just go win.
You got to do whatever you got to do to win, right? I think that's it was a big change moving here. I think that the Brazilian mindset, the guys are a little different the way they, you know. You guys take jiu-jitsu really serious, and you guys are pretty, you know. But they take a lot, how to win, how I'm going to do to win. If you're doing MMA, it's different. It's MMA rules. If you're doing heel hooks. But we're doing gi in IBJJF tournament. You know, I wish we were great like Roger Gracie and just go there and choke everybody.
Of course.
You know, but there's not a lot of Roger Gracies out there. And I think you got to go by the rules and try to find a better way to win, you know. Somebody might be better than you. So you got to find a way to beat a guy that is better than you. So you got to figure it out.
And that's a good point. Like you brought up Roger. You know, so let's say 2009 when Roger submitted everybody. There were 11 other world champions there because he won his weight class and open class. 11 other world champs came from that tournament. Not one of them submitted everybody, yeah. But they were the best in the world that day. Mm-hmm. So there's only one GOAT, and I feel like the it's a marketing thing again. You know, Gordon Ryan's out there submitting everybody. Oh, you suck if you don't submit everybody. Okay, I mean, yeah, like, but not everybody's Gordon Ryan. Yeah. Not everybody's Roger Gracie. Yeah. Not everybody's Buschesh or Rodolfo. And I used that the other night, like Roger, Buschesh, Rodolfo, and not even Buschesh. I don't think he's even submitted everybody. He's squeaked by some wins. Mm-hmm. But Rodolfo and Hodger, I think, are the two guys that submitted everybody in 1 year of their tournament. In the, let's say, 8 years or 10 years they're both active, that's 130 world champions that did not submit every single person.
Yeah.
Two out of 130. That doesn't make the world champion any less better. It's just like if you compare it to American wrestling or Olympic wrestling, how often do you see a pin in the national title finals?
Like pretty much never.
Never. Like that's like the shot heard around the world if that actually happens. So the idea that you're going to submit everybody, it's a goal. It's a really awesome goal to have, but you don't suck if you don't submit every person at a tournament. And the other thing too is, this is going to be controversial. You might like this topic, actually.
All right.
I think submitting off your back is worthless.
It's for the weak.
I don't, like, if you get over a certain weight class.
Yeah, it goes by weight class.
Submitting off your back is.
Unless you're Roger Gracie.
he was choking guys from top.
Yeah, but he did a lot of arm bars from the guard.
He did back in the early in the day, yeah.
Jacare's arm.
That was, yeah, but Jacare still won.
That's true.
That's that sub versus winning. That's true. That sub versus winning method. But yeah, I feel like if you're a heavy, super heavy, ultra heavy, submitting off your back is a dangerous venture.
Dude, even at medium heavy, yeah. I that was something that, you know, I had a really good guard game for medium heavy, and I ended up changing it because I was like, it needs to be sweep dependent. Being on top when you have that much more gravity to, you know, with you, it matters so much in the 10-minute matches.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just like just too long to be underneath somebody carrying their weight if they weigh that much.
Same thing in a 5-minute match for masters. That's like true. I don't want to be under some of those big boys for 5 minutes. Yeah, so
I don't want to be under any of the ultra heavyweights for 30 seconds.
It's miserable. You know? It's miserable. But yeah, so for my game was the same way coming up. I'm sure with you early on jiu-jitsu, old school Gracie way, close guard, cross choke from the guard. That's close guard. That's what I did until probably like brown belt. And then I was like, man, this sucks. I herniated disc in my neck. I had injuries. I'm like, man. So now, and like you said, how your game changed, like my game changed completely. I try to get on top as fast as I can and just smash. It's way better. Easier.
That's old man jiu-jitsu.
It's old man jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Also, the way, the size, right? Because if you, also, if there's no, I don't know any lightweight that finish everybody awards or anything like that.
I don't
that.
Either.
Middleweight. I know Marcelo Garcia won.
What about Mikey? What's the Mikey?
I don't know if he submit everybody. Got to check it out. But I
don't know.
Because when he beat Mion, I know he never tapped Mion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's way harder in the lighter division to submit everybody, even to pass somebody's guard. Like,
I think passing a lightweight guard is probably the hardest thing to do in jiu-jitsu. Yeah,
those guys are so flexible, you know?
Hey guys, Josh McKinney here. Just wanted to interrupt the episode really quick and tell you guys about what I mentioned at the beginning of the episode. We have a deal for you on Nick Sanders' most recent instructional, the Star Spangled Spider Guard. As you guys know, Nick Sanders is a veteran. He is a very, very high level jiu-jitsu black belt, high level competitor. And he is known for being able to play guard at super heavyweight and ultra heavyweight and being able to sweep some really big and tough guys. And one of the main positions he does that from is his spider guard. And it's really more of his knowledge of grip fighting in general, but he will take your spider guard to the next level with this course. I still use stuff that I picked up while we filmed that instructional, and we filmed that instructional like 3 years ago. And so, man, this content is just excellent, and it is 40% off only at simplifyingjiujitsu.com. And so I'll make sure to link it in the description. But if you go to simplifyingjiujitsu.com, you will be able to find the Star Spangled Spider Guard and the big discount on the Star Spangled Spider Guard. This discount ends March 1st. And so you only have 2 weeks to jump on this deal. But get your guard better this year. It's 2024. Time to evolve. It's time to learn to play guard. And so you can do that with the Star Spangled Spider Guard. Let's go ahead and get back into today's episode. Man, that's interesting though, that it's just, there is, I was just actually talking to Kyle, it's a little bit different of a perspective on it, but it's just like, there is so much evolution in jiu-jitsu all the time. And if you start to paint yourself into a box of this is the only way, or this is like the noble way to win, you're going to get passed up. You're going to get left behind. You're going to start losing. And it's the guys that can evolve as the game evolves that seem to be the best.
Well, yeah, because just like with everything, you learn a move and it starts working on everybody. It's great. People aren't going to just let you keep doing it. They're going to create counters. It's the same thing in the jiu-jitsu world. I think it's even like easier to learn counters nowadays with Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Flow Grappling. All these tournaments, you can see them live. And like literally, you can go back that next day and drill something that the world champs are doing and teach it to your gym and then create counters to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like the game just keeps on evolving. So if you're stuck in that close guard, cross grip, arm bar from close guard, man, that's not gonna work.
I think like there's a theory that society already got where we are now and then went down, like we build something, you go so far ahead that you go back again.
Uh-huh.
I think jiu-jitsu a lot like that. I stopped doing butterfly a while ago, like a purple belt.
Uh-huh.
And I'm watching that guy from Europe, that guy with the long hair.
Oh, Wozinski.
Sweeping everybody.
Yeah.
In a couple of those sweeps, my coach in Florida used to make us do over and over again. I was like, this doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Rodolfo Vieira going through those butterfly guards like crazy. This guy is winning the worlds doing butterfly again, you know. And soon we have somebody doing deep half guard. They switch a little bit, but, you know, it's a lot of stuff I'm starting to drill again. I stopped using a long time ago, you know, and I'm back at it again. I think we go, like, a while ago, it was all about lapel guard, like a warm guard.
Yeah.
And you see low and saw the guys countering, and then people like, oh.
Yeah, you don't even see those really much anymore. It's hard to do it. Yeah.
Hardly at all. Like, I don't think at the Worlds, there was hardly any lapel guard being played.
And it's like, you know, for me, here's my hot take on move that's making a comeback. I've been telling my students this. Double underpass. And the reason I say double underpass is not because it's ability to pass the guard, but when you're competing 5 or 6 minutes, you're competing up to 10, some matches are 20 minutes now, controlling the pace of the match becomes one of the most important things. You know, back to that, like, oh, submission is all that matters thing. It's like the same thing as in professional football, maybe 10 years ago, they used to, their bad thing they would say about Tom Brady before he won like 4 more Super Bowls was that he is a game manager. Like, oh, he's only a game manager. And like, that means that is this bad thing. That's this negative thing on him. But the thing about managing a game well and managing a jiu-jitsu match well is now it is me and the clock versus you. It's not just me versus you anymore.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, I'm up an advantage and you cannot deal with my double underpass. Well, you're going to open up a pass for me because you are down. You know, you are now losing to the clock.
I think double unders made a quick return last ADCC or 2 ADCCs ago. I forget which one it was, but I was watching that. They were doing double underpasses. I think it was two ADCCs ago, 2019. Man, they were doing double unders on everybody to prevent leg locks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there again, you can't enter into legs if you don't have the butterfly hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a pretty big meta game going on there.
It's tough. I was just talking about, like, everybody's worried about leg lock, and they see somebody come with a double and they're going back on time, like, to counter, right? It's such a.
And passing on the knees is getting big again, which I hate. I hate it. But passing on the knees, people are passing
can't
on the knees.
Can't move Guy Watts on his knees.
That's true. That's true.
He's a brick. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that is the, you know, you look at the way Kyle plays jiu-jitsu, it is like, I don't care if I can't do anything, you definitely won't get to do anything.
Now his jiu-jitsu is a modern jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. None of us are having fun. Uh-huh. But like, do you think the gi will help you no gi or is...
Yeah, I think that, I was just talking to Jeff about it the other day, yesterday, actually. I think that the future is like the Mika Gavaos, the guys who are good at gi and no gi, who win ADCC and the world.
Like,
yeah,
like, and the Rotolos, too.
Rotolos,
you know?
Yeah. Those guys are the ones who are going to be.
I think all the gi guys won ADCC, most of them, right? So it was.
So who would have been.
Kynan.
Yeah, the lightweight was that guy. Shark.
Marigali.
No, yeah, he didn't win ADCC. Maragalli didn't win.
So Baby Shark won.
Baby Shark was in the final against the other teammate. Both guys gi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, 77 was Mika versus Cade.
Both and, gi guys.
Uh-huh. Gi and no gi, yep. 88 was Giancarlo Bordoni.
Against Hook in the final.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Both gi Gardone, guys. Yeah. Giancarlo stopped training in the gi, you know, 6 months before.
You fought him
before.
On gi, right?
I did. That was actually his last tournament in the gi. I think he must have got scared. I don't know.
No, he was scared. I was there.
He was like, man, I really hurt my fingers choking this guy. You know, I don't know if I want to continue, you know?
Yeah, he trained in the gi.
He was a gi guy.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Gordon Ryan trains in the gi every now and then, too. He was helping Marigali for that fight.
Well, I don't think I have Roosevelt no gi guy. Like, straight up, no gi guy that never went to a gi gym or was not under any, like, let's say
I don't know jiu-jitsu,
Brazilian jiu-jitsu lineage or anything like that.
I don't know of any.
Me either. You don't? I mean, you're going to... Yeah,
I think jiu-jitsu is Brazilian.
I think you're right, and you have to train in the gi to be good, you know?
At least a little bit,
I
right?
think those are the hot takes from the episode so far, oh, yeah. You know? I think for me personally, being able to switch back and forth keeps me interested in jiu-jitsu. You know, it's like... If you compete in the gi all year and you've competed for like 9 months and then you're like, man, I don't feel like doing more international opens. I don't want to do this like in no gi worlds, no gi pans is coming up. A lot of times you're like, I'll do those.
Yeah.
You know, I'll screw it. I'll do those. Those are fun. You get to wrestle a little more. You get to just train something different.
Yeah.
I feel like though the American jiu-jitsu part, the wrestling definitely keeps things interesting. Like, I think adding wrestling into, which I'm sure I know the Brazilians, I actually read Drysdale's book, mm-hmm. Closed Garden. What's it? Who's the founder of Gracie Baja? Carlos mm-hmm. Jr. He talks about adding wrestling into jiu-jitsu back in the day. But I think, like, that keeps me motivated, too, is like, okay, well, this is a whole new art that I'm not very good at that I can just kind of practice and have fun with.
Have you read Drysdale's new book?
No.
So one of my students has it. If you want to read it, he sent me a copy of it and I had him on the podcast, but it was mostly about how, modern day jiu-jitsu training, how like none of it came from Elio. It came from
Carlson.
Yeah, it came from Carlson.
I'm Carlson Grace lineage, and I learned that from the, you know, they
that
was, tell me
that's what he said. Is that that he Carlson said, guys?
You gotta wrestle. You gotta be strong. I heard that. And then when you train somebody from the other lineage, they still have that, like, oh, you don't need to be strong. You can survive. Nobody can mount on you. Don't let people pass your guard. Don't let them get position on you. Be strong. Be fast. That was the mindset since I was a white belt. That's how I learned jiu-jitsu, you know. And you got to wrestle. They'll make me wrestle a lot. I hate wrestling. And I think it's pretty different. And he's right, you know. I think
he spread it to the masses, like BTT.
Yeah.
You know, Carlson, he, like, against Elio's will, like, started teaching poor people. Mm-hmm. And then he did group settings.
That was the big thing, as he was saying, is like, you know, he's like, how do you train jiu-jitsu now? He's like, it's not private lessons.
Yeah.
It's like, that was... You know, the Gracie Academy was built on private lessons, and it was like, it was structured very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, and he has a lot of fact behind it. The book is honestly, it's a really great read. He tracks jiu-jitsu all the way back from like kind of the same origins of pro wrestling, which is like the carnivals where guys would wrestle
people out in the crowd and be like, hey, I'll break your arm for $10. You
know? And so
3 cents, actually.
Yeah, man, that book was really good. The podcast I did with him, I really feel like he covers a lot of that information on that episode. But it is just, it's just about like, hey, this is how jiu-jitsu is trained, and it was built around what actually works.
See, it's crazy. So my lineage is crazy. I start off with Salo Ribeiro. So Salo Ribeiro's Gracie Umaita, and we had a little bit of that, like, don't use strength kind of thing. And then we switched to Helsin, and then it was all, there's only closed guard, there's no such thing as half guard or any other guard, cross chokes, arm bars, don't use strength. And then I moved to St. Louis, started training with Vagi, also Gracie Umaita. We started getting a little more into... Yeah, be physical, be strong.
A lot of guys did MMA there.
Yeah, a lot of MMA, a lot of American wrestlers came in. And then switched to Novo Niao, which is non-Gracie lineage. And so Leo Pisania is non-Gracie, and it was like train hard, train, like fight. This is a fight. Use muscle strength, train hard. And then Junior and I have our own team now, and we have a lot of influence with wrestlers from his background, American Top Team, and my background. And yeah, we train hard, we train smart, but like, yeah, you need to be aggressive, you need to be strong, you have to be in shape, mm-hmm. and be able to last, you know, however long your fight is. If you're not, you're not going to win tournaments. And so that's kind of the growth of myself and Junior, I believe.
Yeah, I think.
When I'm trying to get in shape, I go to Revive, you know?
Yeah,
well, I think the intensity is there. And then I also, like, if I injure somebody, I don't feel bad. Yeah, I'm like, this is one of Nick. This doesn't cost me anything.
We lost a couple members because of you, but
yeah.
I don't think it's me as much as it's just like, I'll come in and I'll be like, Junior, I've been tapping people with pressure. And Junior will be like, no way. White belt, come here. Roll with Josh. Roll with Josh full speed right
do
now.
Mother's milk.
And yeah, and Junior will be like, tap him with pressure, Josh. Kill him.
That white belt didn't tap. I have this guy. Yeah, Josh was tapping everybody.
That was
pressure.
That was Lawrence, bro.
I put him with Lawrence. God. Lawrence ate it, and he didn't train the rest of the week. Had fever after. But he didn't tap. Dude, like, he was sick.
Dude,
like,
Lawrence, he needed a blue belt after
that guy. One. Lawrence is the American zombie,
dude.
He doesn't stop.
He's the American zombie. You know, St. Louis Open. He comes home with a gold medal, but his his, I think it might have been his semifinal round. Huff was coaching him, and I come over and I start helping. And I'm like, oh, this poor dude, he is, you know, he's at heavyweight, as tall as he is. I'm like, he's in trouble. He's fighting a guy that's obviously wrestled for a very long time. He gets thrown about 75 times, but every time he bellies down and he gets his hips up before he gets scored on. Every single time he's down a lot of advantages. And I'm like, hey, this guy's getting exhausted from throwing him. And Lawrence is still peppy. And there was this point that Lawrence has like, is in front headlock standing. He's got a belt grip and a pant grip. And I was like, yeah, yeah, do that. Try to run him down. Later on, Lawrence told me, like, no, I didn't have any intention of doing that. I was just trying to hold on. And he literally ran this dude down, took him down, beat him 2-0, and then did the same thing in the finals.
Well, that guy was a college wrestler at white belt that was sandbagging. But, I mean, yeah, I guess you don't use any energy just getting thrown. You know what I mean?
It's like, I do. If you get if thrown, I got thrown, thrown 75 times, I'm gassed.
I pull guard and I get tired. Yeah. But one complaint I have against the head nod guys, they did us wrong, was Lawrence won his first match at a Fuji tournament or AGF. I don't know.
Oh, no, not this.
And he fought one of his guys, and I couldn't get in quick enough to coach Lawrence. I was coaching somebody else. And this guy shot on Lawrence. Lawrence got a guillotine. The guy's inside control. And little Jeff is like, you have it, Lawrence. You have it. The guy's inside control. Have him on the side control.
Von Flucho.
And don't let it go, Lawrence. Don't let it go, Lawrence. They're telling Lawrence not to let it go. So Lawrence goes out. He's out. So I look to the side. Lawrence on the floor. His arms straight on. Like he's in the cross, you know. Out. Cold. And they're like, what happened? And Jeff tells him, they start laughing like, like, man,
listen, this is guys. I was the one. Jeff didn't even know that it was one of our guys that he was coaching against. He's like, yeah, Junior told me to coach Lawrence. I'm in. I'll do it. I'll do anything for Junior.
And it was one of your guys?
And so it was one of our Jerseyville guys, right? So Jeff has never met him, but you should recognize that, like, hey, our coaches are on the other side across from you. He's got a head nod
patch on his
gi. But Jeff is like, and Jeff's sure like that he was coaching him correctly. He's like, oh Jeff, you're going to finish this choke. You've got him. And then as soon as he goes to sleep, Jeff goes from like one coaching chair, like looks over and sees our whole team celebrating and then goes to the other side.
Man, they did it on purpose.
Yeah.
They did it on
purpose. Hey man, we got that win though. We got that.
You guys did. A dirty win.
That's a dirty win.
Don't you ask Jeff to coach for you. He's an idiot.
I probably didn't ask him.
Get out of here. You always
He's always Jeff, there. When you go to a tournament, Jeff is always by your side.
I'll come to the gym on a Friday sometime, and Jeff will get out of his car and open up his trunk and start pulling out bags of trash. I'm like, Jeff, what is this? I'm like, oh, Junior told me I had to throw away this trash, and he's throwing away in the head nod dumpster. Look, he drove it 45 minutes to Granite City.
He might be our student now.
Yeah, he is. I gave him his stripe.
You did.
Yeah.
You gave him two
was
stripes.
Was one or two?
Two.
Did he just say he put two more on his belt the other day?
He put one more on one his more. Belt.
No, take it off, Nick.
Yeah. Keep this Bryce was telling me that. I'm like, yeah, you know they're imaginary anyway, right? You know? Like,
no, it's not. Yeah. And, Bryce is just jealous. You know?
Bryce over there wishing he had three or four stripes.
Yeah, Bryce, yeah, Bryce a purple belt, bro.
Well, I know. I'm just
zero saying, stripes.
Yeah. That's true. You don't have any stripes on your purple belt, dude.
Jeff, every Friday, he goes to the gym, he trains there, and then he sleeps in one of those rooms and stay for the night class.
Yeah, and then trains again.
He teaches kids. Man.
Yeah, he's stud.
I would never let him teach any of my guys. He's nuts.
I will say this,
though. He'll teach a class, and he'll be like, yeah, you don't have to tap to that. You know, you could just, they can't finish that. You could just eat it.
I'll say this. He is the future of St. Louis tag team jiu-jitsu, unfortunately. He is.
Unfortunately.
Until we get another Matt Green out at Revive.
You need the Matt Green to be 18, though.
Derek and Drew. If those two.
Oh, yeah, I have two kids. They've been there since they're talented.
Man, they're Baron Bolowin at, you know, 9 years old. I mean, they're good.
I'll tell you this. Jeff would smash those nine-year-olds, bro.
For now, but they'll be. I don't want to push them to compete. I had that problem in Florida. Mm-hmm. We're really into competition. I had a huge competition team, kids competition team. And they go to these tournaments, the parents are almost fighting the kids, almost fighting me, complaining. It's pretty crazy. Last tournament, I took one of my 11-year-old girl, shy little girl, was scared to compete. They matched her with a 15-year-old teenager. It was pretty bad. I tried to complain, and the father like, no, you got to let her have the experience. I was like, oh, I think that girl is too big. Not a good experience for her. But if they keep training, you hear about those
kids. Yeah, and she still trains. She still trains, and she just like, whatever, you know. Like, it wasn't traumatic to her because we didn't make it a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, okay.
That's the hardest thing with kids, though. We were just talking about it before, you know, Junior was 45 minutes late. but we were just talking about it. The hardest thing with kids is so many kids would be really, really good at jiu-jitsu if they stuck with it, but they just don't, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, it is so hard to keep them, to transition from the kids' class to the adult class, you know, and to, you know, to keep them just doing it consistently. And so, you know, that's why you get kids like Jeff that are just farmers that have nothing else to do.
I don't even know if he graduated high school.
I don't even know if he has a family.
I don't.
He's always by himself.
Listen, I've never met his parents. He claims that he started training at 13 years old. Uh-huh. I don't think he has parents. I have
don't think so.
I don't know where they.
Dude, I've never met his family. I don't know where he lives. For all I know, he could probably sleep in your gym.
People, for all I know, he lives at Head Nod.
We're not lying, and people might think we're lying. In Chicago, he was there by himself. I was like, where is your parents? Like, oh, they dropped me off here. They'll come to pick me up later. I was like, I want to meet your mom. She's like, no, don't worry about it. After we finished the matches, he's like, where are you going now? I was like, I'm going to my hotel. I was like, can I come with you? Okay, come, Jeff. So we go to the hotel, me and my friend that was there competing. Jeff's there, sitting in the corner in our room, we're watching UFC fight. He stand up. He's like, oh, I'm going home. Just next day, at 2 a.m., I go online. He's online. I was like, hey, bro, go to sleep. You're competing tomorrow. He's like, never. That's why he says back. I get there early, 8 a.m. Jeff is there running around the tournament. It's like, Jeff, did you sleep? Where is your mom?
No.
So I should drop me off here early. I was like, yeah.
He's a cyborg.
Oh, man. He was. We had him in Orlando and for PANS. And he was, I'm trying to sleep the first night, and it's 2 or 3 in the morning. And he's jumping down the stairs, seeing how many stairs he can make it down, right? He's 18 years old at this point. And so the next day, I'm like, I've got to, you know, we had this like 2 days where no one was competing. We're not even going to be at the tournament. Like, I got to figure out something. And so what I ended up doing was in the morning, I gave him his first cup of coffee. And he was bouncing off the walls, but I knew he was wasting a lot of energy. In Florida, made sure he got a ton of sun. Sun exposure plays a huge role in breaking a child. And so he starts to kind of to fade a little bit. By 9 p.m., we're all sitting in the hot tub at our like where we're staying, and he is like falling asleep in the hot tub. And I'm like, I'm a dad. I did it.
Yeah, you know? That's training, like, right?
For the real got you trained for the real deal. That's why you should have a kid.
He's ready. Yeah.
You should have another one, Josh.
I don't know, man. That's kids are a lot, dude. I almost feel bad for Taryn Jr.'s groin when he just had a newborn. I mean, I don't, you know, because I know he's gonna try to kill me.
It's true.
I wish you came the first month when your baby was just born.
That would
come to revive.
Be a terrible idea, man.
I told everybody.
You would have done good.
I know. I got to work harder, not smart. I work smarter, not harder.
I think I trained like the day my daughter was born. I want to train some
Nick trains every day.
I'm regretting it now. I'm getting beat up, but yeah, I train a lot.
Man, yeah, I don't think I've trained since my son's been born, you know? I mean, like, I'll train with Bryce, but...
That's not really training. That's not training. Like I said, you know, like, when I rolled white belt, it's not a quality round.
Warm-up round. You know, honestly...
Bryce, white belt's interchangeable.
I don't know if you guys brought your geese, but isn't Bryce supposed to grapple us all one after another?
So, I didn't tell you about this. Bryce, 2 weekends ago here at Head Nod, I was like, how are you going to feel when Junior, myself, and Josh just start going in on you halfway through the podcast? He's like, don't worry.
Which we're doing right now.
He's like, don't worry. It's gonna go like this. I'm gonna fight. Is it Josh first, Junior second, than you last, Nick. I was like, that is a terrible lineup.
Oh, wow. This guy is tough. I'm going to figure
out your day. Guess I didn't show up for Open Mat Sunday, though.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. He did. He.
But also, who was still in Brazil last Sunday? Yeah,
that's true.
And our family loves us, so we'll probably join them.
That's true. If honestly, if Bryce survived that, I would give him a stripe. You know, I haven't given a stripe in 7 years, but I would give him a stripe.
What do you think about that lineup, though? If you had to do it,
I think that is, man. I just don't. I think that's the worst. I would probably want. I don't think there's any way to take that lineup well.
I was thinking about it because Jeff and I were talking about it last night. I was thinking about it. I was like, man, who would I want to go first? I was like, no, Josh would just gas me out. Like, I would just go with you. I'd be gassed.
And I have no, and like with Bryce, I would have no intention of submitting him. I've submitted him enough times.
Yeah.
I would be like, hey, guys, I'm going to wear this dude down for the team.
See, that's why you can't have Josh go first. That's the thing. And I was like, yeah, Josh would gas me out. Junior would just smash the shit out of me. And I'm like, I'll just smash the shit out of me too. So it's like, man, there is no good.
That's not a good lineup. Bryce is in for a world of hurt when we stop recording
Friday,
this podcast.
Friday, Bryce, come up to Revive.
Starting in January.
Yeah, January.
Ooh.
Okay.
Man.
All right.
January is like next week, bro. I'll
be there.
That's going to be a lot.
It'll be fun.
All right. Well, luckily I'll have Bryce there to take some of the beatings for me. So on that note, on the note of Jeff has no family and we're going to kill Bryce, for you guys with running a school together, like you guys both definitely skill wise could run your own jiu-jitsu schools. You know, you're both very good coaches. How do you guys go about not stepping on each other's toes? And also not only that, but I feel like you guys do a good job of even relying on each other's strengths and being able to run your team that way.
Man, for me, it's just not having an ego. Also, like, I'm okay with taking a backseat. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, I Junior has great leadership. He steers us in the right direction, and I'm okay with just being there, being a part of it, helping out, guiding when I can. But I'm okay. Like, whatever. If Junior's like, hey, Nick, this is how it kind of works. Like, hey, I want to do this. I'm like, cool, man. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. If I say, hey, Junior, what do you think about this? He's like, yeah, cool.
Like, Nick is a good partner. It's like, he doesn't like cleaning the mats. Otherwise, that's the only thing, if you ask me. Otherwise, everything else is, like, super cool. Talk about changing a schedule or teaching a technique. Like, man, that's awesome. He's excited about everything. And he'll make it happen. And I have no complaints about him. I think it was the best move I did because when I went to Open Revive, he told me he wanted to have his own gym and start doing something. He was teaching here in
Hit Squad.
I was like, yeah, let's do something here in St. Charles. And a couple of months after that, my heart stopped and I went crazy.
Yeah, like, it was bad.
Crazy. I couldn't be in the gym. I didn't sleep for 3 months. I wasn't there anymore. And if it wasn't for Nick, the Revive will be gone. We have to close down or let somebody else teach. And he not only kept the place alive, taught all the classes, kept me motivated, had patience with me, and he also kept me pushing me to compete. I had him there by my side. Because like, the doctor told me, never compete again.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of people screaming or put under a lot of pressure, you're going to faint. You have syncope, and your heart might stop again. And I think him, you, Kai Watson, the guys that pushed me, to get back and competing, I did pens.
Yeah.
Only did pens to make sure I wasn't going to faint. I was like, when I start getting dizzy, when I walk in, I was like, oh, I'm going to faint. I'm going to faint. It'd be really embarrassing. I spin under the guy, and I could come up in a sweep. I remember Nick, come up, come up. I saw him. I was like, I'm not coming up. I'm staying here. I'm dizzy. And after the match, I guess I'm not that bad. I didn't faint. I'm going to do it again. Let's do Nashville. And Nashville, I was like, I'm killing these guys now. I feel great.
And then and then St. Louis, you won.
Yeah. So I think what makes it easy for me is we don't bump heads. If it's really hard about something, like, dude, this needs to be done this way, we do it that way. Some stuff, like, I want it done in a certain way, he understands. We both really relax with Jessica. Will I have picked the clothes, yeah. design? It's, we don't, you know, right? We don't.
Jessica, I'm not gonna lie. Jessica runs the show. She's if it weren't so, I look at it this way: like, if it weren't for Jessica, we would be in some trouble because I don't know. I don't know shit about running a business besides like teaching classes and being a recruiter. Jessica's the backbone of Revive. I'll say that all day long.
We'd like, give everything for free, too.
Yeah, for real.
Me and Nick, like, we're working. Jessica talks to me all the time, like, dude, you got to stop. We got all these clothes. A lot of times see somebody, oh, no, man, just take it. Oh,
yeah,
you
know, we're bad about
that.
Oh,
membership. Somebody talked to me or Nick, ask for a deal.
We think, like, okay, let's just get him in the door. Jessica's like, no.
How much you want to... Jessica was talking to me a couple of days ago. Look, in the beginning, you gave all these people a deal. They're still like... That's why you have a lot of men. I was like, Jessica, don't worry about it. Okay, we do it better now. But yeah. And for another guy working with your wife, it's easy to like, hey, man, don't talk to my wife like that. Or don't do that. You can get like in those situations, some people. But Nick's super respectful. And we don't get involved in those small things that girls are pretty strong about. Or her as a manager, like, make sure you charge people. Or we're going to do this design or this outfit, or we should get the mat should be white, or the mat should be pink. Oh,
yeah, whatever.
Like, cool. Like, can we roll on it? Yeah, we roll on it, you know. So, and so I'm a little, some stuff in the gym I like done certain way, like, you know, a lot of those things are will help me and Nick too. A lot of we pretty relaxed, you do whatever you want, but we want to have some rules, and me and Nick have the same mindset, so I think we're good.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of problems that jiu-jitsu schools have is, they open up and they think they know everything about business, or they think, oh, I'm a black belt, I'm going to do awesome at jiu-jitsu, or the money's just going to roll in once I open up kind of thing. It'll be falling out of my pockets. I've heard that before. But, the thing is like when you have a partner, it kind of keeps you in reality, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like you're not the cult leader. Mm-hmm. You're not the head honcho. And then also like, man, running a gym by yourself is stressful.
Yeah.
Like Junior said, if I wasn't there, it would have shut down. There's times for the Army when I'm gone for a month or two, or it's like, who am I going to get to run the gym? So, and then Junior goes to Brazil.
Sometimes I just wake up and go to Brazil. Yeah. I do that all the time.
Like, I know, like, last week we were supposed to podcast and you were in Brazil.
I didn't even know I was in Brazil. It's like, I'm in Brazil. I can't drive there. I can't just drive there, you know? And it's like, I can't go.
So I do, like, if you find the right business partner and we laid it out early on, we have like an operations agreement, you know, like as a contract that we sign, like, here's our roles, here's what we do. And if you have the right business partner, having a partner is super, super, super valuable mm-hmm. for a gym, for a gym that's, our gym's going to have 300 students. Mm-hmm. We'll probably have 600 mm-hmm. in the next 3 or 4 years. We might even have another gym at some other point. So having a business partner that you can trust and you're on the same page with is a lot of people see this like, well, I don't want to share the money. Well, bro, you're only going to make X amount of dollars. At some point, you're going to have to branch off and either hire employees or get a partner.
Yeah, I think it's not only about the money. I think some people have that power mentality. Yeah. I want to run the show. That's why I never wanted to use like my last name or like Nick's last name or have our own logo. Like people do, oh, I want to have my black belt patch. Pedro Sanchez Jiu-Jitsu, right? It's like everybody done that before. That's why I like having a name like Revive. We picked because we're going to a stage in our life that we're feeling burnout. We want to, you know, start. We want a place where people go train and they feel revived after, they feel good, you know. So that's why we picked the name. And I like the ideas. Like, this is a place and it's not Junior Jiu-Jitsu, it's not Nick Jiu-Jitsu, it's not. You know, soon we're going to have 30 black belts around them fighting. Like, oh, it's Revive. It's all of us make Revive, you know.
And that is a problem, too, is when you have a bunch of black belts in the gym that are individuals. I actually just was talking to someone from San Diego, and they're talking about Atos. Like, when people train there, it's kind of like every man for themselves. It's not a team. And so because everybody's a Ronin that goes there. They start off with another team, and don't really have a whole lot of loyalty. And then they go there and they just want to get better as competitors, which is cool. But our gym is like, we have a really good culture. If some of our black belts want to go start a gym, we support them. We just ask, hey, like, don't do it within X mile radius. Just a common courtesy thing. But it's like, man, like, if you want to go start a gym, cool. What do you need from us?
Granite City is a good spot.
It's the future, you know.
That is. That's the place to be, man. Man, but honestly, I always love to bash all of our friends' gyms, but honestly, Revive is such a great place. You guys have done such a great job building that group, and it's so cool for me to have seen it from its inception, you know, seen it from the beginning.
Yeah, and six students, like not even, I think about that. Like three people start with us.
Yeah, Josh haven't put the mats in the other place.
I did.
Working, yeah. And he sat with me and explained kick side, explained everything. And him and Kai Watts opened their business. Like, that's how we do things.
Yeah.
And, man, I remember even going over before Fridays were what they are now and going to the 9 or 10 a.m. class at Revive on Fridays before COVID hit. There were two people in there. You know, I was fighting Big Dan in those classes. And just to see where you guys are at now, it's just really awesome to get to see your guys' success on that.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So do you guys have, just while we're on that topic, and you guys did honestly give so many like subtle tips in how people expect a gym to be. Do you guys have any kind of things that people should look at before deciding to maybe start a gym?
Start a gym?
Yeah. Because, you know, like so many guys, I was just talking about this to Watson and my dad. It's like so many guys, they dedicate their whole life to jiu-jitsu, you know, just like we did. And initially, maybe starting a gym isn't even a thought process. But after 10 years, you know, after 15 years, you're like, wow, I have dedicated everything to this skill. I would like to teach. I would like to maybe make this a livelihood for myself. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I think the most important thing is live in reality. Like you have to have the talk with yourself. Like, man, this could fail. Mm-hmm. This is a very real thing. You know. So if there is a possibility of failure, how are you going to safeguard yourself against that, right? So when you take on that business venture, it's all your time, all of your time, all of your money. Everything goes into that gym. So and then, you know, branding yourself within your community is another thing that you have to think about, because there are some gyms where, like, they're not good people running the school, and that gets out in the community and you lose people. So you have to be a good person, like on and off the mat, so to speak. So it starts there. You have to know that this is a risk, right? And if you don't put in maximum effort and you think that people are just going to show up just because you put jiu-jitsu on the side of a building and put some mats down, and they're going to come train with you, that's not reality. So that's number one. Number two is to keep your students, you know, you have to be humble. Right. You have to. It's a two way street. You have to listen to their needs and what they want to get from you, because they're paying you. Like you are their they're your customer. So essentially they're paying your wages. They don't owe you shit. They can leave at any moment in time. So you have to listen to what they want to get out of your gym. And then you also have to kind of guide them on what we expect at our gym. And where those lines cross, that's where you're going to have students who return, who spread the good word of your gym being awesome. So I think those are some of the big things. It's the culture that you have to build. It's not, I'm the boss, this is how it goes. It's like, what do you guys want to learn? What do you guys want to, what do you expect from jiu-jitsu? Oh, you want to be just a soccer mom who gets in shape? Cool, come to this beginner's class. Oh, you want to be a world-class competitor? Okay, well, you need to be training with these guys, go to these other affiliate gyms, and, you know, that's the culture is important.
Yeah, I think what Nick says is true, and it would be hard to start. I think it's really hard to start a gym. I think you make sure you're ready, you prepare, make sure you have your black belt, being a black belt for a while, know what you're getting yourself into. It's a job, you know. A lot of times we get to the gym, we're tired. Nick's been working all day. He gets super stressed out. Like, gotta start again, teach kids, teach adults, prepare classes, prepare a schedule. And it's, you know, if you want to grow, it would be hard work. And I've been teaching since 2009, I think, and a period of my life of 2 years I didn't teach, and I was training more. I was feeling great because I was getting out of the, you know. I remember telling my wife, like, 4 years, my clothes smell like the gym, my body, like, everything, it was that gym. The gym, I was, every gym has a different smell,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I had that smell of the America Top Team Davey that was being there all day. I ran summer camps there. I stayed there all day for years. And that break, I was like, man, maybe I'll never teach jiu-jitsu again. I'll just train. It's amazing. I'll go to Kaiwatsu. I come to your gym all the time, and I'll just roll. And you guys give me advice. I was like, I don't want to teach anybody. Sometimes people ask me, I'll help, but I was just learning jiu-jitsu, yeah. Having fun. And then I kind of miss those days. They were great. I wouldn't go back in time. I love what I have now. Revive is my life. So before you start a gym, you got to see where you are in your life. If you want to, I think if we weren't partners, you wouldn't be able to live all the time and compete.
Right.
When you do and focus on tournament. A lot of times, Nick's focused on rolling hard and, you know, I'll teach the class, I'll work at the white belt, he does his thing. And so you got to see what point in your life you are on. It'll be hard to be competing every week and running a gym, you know?
Yeah, I think having a business partner really helps out a lot, keeping you in reality. I think that's my overall arching theme for that is, like, you have to be realistic. You know, budget. How many gym owners actually budget? Probably not many.
Yeah.
You know, they fly by the seat of their pants. Be like, if you want to have a gym, budget for it. Save up money to buy the mats. Like, we were lucky. We were making enough money. We paid off our mats in less than a year. Like, because we budgeted appropriately. Mm-hmm. People don't talk about that stuff. And that's thousands, tens of thousands of dollars the mats paid off in a year.
We had a job and the business going that we didn't have to be taking money out of the gym. Yeah. So I think that helped us a lot, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah.
We didn't need a paycheck, you know.
Yeah.
That Revive paid itself.
He had a business I was working. So we were working regular jobs and running a gym, which it sucks, but, you know, that's the dream that we had and it worked out. But I mean, like, in my current line of work, my day job, I talked to my sales team. I'm like, look, this is your business. What you put into it is what you get out. Mm-hmm. So if you think you're going to go in and just open the doors at 4, teach class at 5, 6, leave at 8 every day, man, you're going to be broke.
Uh-huh.
You know? So,
and there's so much more that goes into running a gym than showing up at 5 and 6.
Yeah, like, great, you can teach a class, but man, what are you doing to bring people in? What are you doing to innovate? What are you doing to make, to set your gym apart from Gracie Baja? Mm-hmm. Or Gracie Umaita or Jack's MMA or whatever it is, you know, like, what are you doing better than everybody else where they want to come train with you? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, get into your own gym is a daunting task, but I mean, it's worth it if you want to do it. But man, there's a lot that people don't really realize.
I totally agree with that.
I was committed. Got to make it work. I had plans. If this doesn't work, I can start make Nick do OnlyFans, you know, military, war bad guy. You know, people pay money to watch him do crazy things.
Only guys, though, do.
Yeah. Yeah, some weird guys, but you got to do what you got to do.
Do you think that would have been more financially beneficial?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Imagine. Yeah. Him and Dan doing OnlyFans together. True war vet.
Jeez. Shout out to the podcast with Nick and Dan.
Yeah. Listen, doing OnlyFans. Look, bro, don't make
I've thought about selling my feet pics online. You know how much those people make?
I don't know if you're in the target market of feet pics,
bro.
Then
I can AI feet pics.
I don't know. I don't know if I mean, personally, I don't know if I would subscribe to Nick's OnlyFans. No offense.
No, you're not the type of people.
Yeah, you're not the type of guys.
You know.
So,
Crutchfield, like, you know, those type of guys. Let's bring have names lined up.
There has not been one positive shout out on this episode. So many people from the St. Louis area got shouted out. Every single one of them has been pretty derogatory.
That's how they know we love them.
That's true.
That's how they know
that's
we true. Love them.
It, that's, I mean, it's no different than actually at the gym.
No, you know? It's not.
The only people, only person we shout out and like talk shit on that I absolutely hate is Bryce.
Yeah.
Honestly, if there was an award for the worst person on earth, it would absolutely go to Bryce.
100%.
Yeah. I can't imagine anyone as worse. as bad of a person as Bryce, you know?
Oh, Bryce.
Man.
We love you.
It's a terrible name.
We do. We do. You're doing... Oh, the sound's out. The sound's out on the podcast. He muted us.
Cut the video off. Cut the feed.
So I just thought I would finish with, as we kind of look forward, you know, we're finishing. I think this podcast will come out January, but for us, this is the end of the year. Any kind of big plans, big goals for you guys?
Oh, yes, we have a lot of plans.
Brazil?
We have a trip coming out to Brazil. I want to make sure Nick, Kai Watts, and Josh McKinney will go. Pirata is going, confirmed, 100%. You know how Pirata is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know? He's down.
He came up to me like, I want to go to Brazil. And
ready to get in a fist fight.
Set it up. So I went to Brazil this time, and I went to a gym. I trained everybody there. I made friends. We have a place to train. It's a pretty cool place. And we picked an area. This is not a camp. I'm not setting up your trip for you. I'm going to help some guys that need help with the visa to get their visas. I'm going to get the Airbnb. We all stay together in the same area. We're going to train jiu-jitsu, eat good food, and compete at Brasileiros. And I was going to take 10 guys. I already have 10 guys signed up, so yeah. I'm going to maybe take 20 guys, 10 more. So
I'm going to try to make it. If not, I've already promised, committed. You heard it here first. 2025, I'm going to do the Grand Slam.
Oh.
Yeah.
All Euros, right.
Pans, Brasileiros.
Let's do it. Should do it.
That's pretty
just
fun.
Just putting out that this Brazil trip is an open invitation to no one.
To no
one. All right.
We call you by only the guys.
Only like special people go.
I need you to ask my wife about the Brazil trip.
Your wife don't like me. The woman do not like me.
So. Nick, I'm going to need you to ask my wife about the Brazil trip. I'm going to need Kyle Watson.
Yeah, Kyle Watson's the right guy to have butter up the wives.
Yeah. That's what I need you to ask Kyle Watson to ask
just
my wife.
Don't have him do it when he's had a couple of beers, because then it gets sloppy.
Honestly, that's when my wife loves Kyle Watson.
Oh, then, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, he's, you know, that's when funny. When he's not making as much sense, you know, and he just keeps looking at you going, are you okay? Are you doing good?
I gotta pee.
We're 20 minutes into the podcast, and Kyle Watson hit me with, I've gotta pee. Can we stop the podcast? I've gotta pee.
That's his life.
It's been 20 minutes. You know, like, what do you do on a flight? Like, I don't understand.
Oh, hold on. Speak of flights. Do you remember when we competed at Austin and Kyle booked the flights for us? And it was like 1 a.m. on Spirit Airlines.
Bro, and we had like 3 connecting flights to save $40. Yeah. Yes, I do remember that.
That was miserable.
And Nick's telling me like, yeah, man, I get a little nervous on flights, only on the takeoff. I'm like, don't worry, Nick. We only have to take off 6 times today. You know, he's like, by the end of the day, he's like, I don't get nervous on flights anymore. Hey,
do you like LA? Because we're going to Austin. But yeah. Fly down.
Like, what are we doing, Kyle? Your gym has 700 members, and we're saving $50. And we could have flown. St. Louis flies directly to Austin.
Not on Spirit at 1 a.m.
Oh, man, that was terrible. If there is something you do not do, you don't let Kyle Watson book your travel.
I learned a lesson there.
Mm-hmm.
Do not let that
And happen. I'm sure you never let him do it again.
Oh, no.
That was the same point that you and I, speaking of negative shout outs, you and I were sponsored by Fuji.
Oh, yeah.
And we both had the same Fuji backpack that broke the same trip.
I was bear hugging my bag because all my stuff was in that bag. Bear hugging it through at the airport. Oh, actually, we went out to eat too. We walked from the venue to the place, and I had my bag like this, just full of shit, flying all over the place.
To be fair, though, you were making fun of me when my bag broke.
Yes,
and then your bag
karma
broke
hit,
too.
And it was Fuji. And then we were sponsored by them, and then without telling us, they just straight up stopped giving us any products. Yeah, I emailed them like, "Hey, am I still sponsored by you guys? Because I didn't get like the quarterly check." I was like, oh, yeah, no, we're not sponsoring athletes anymore. Cool.
I have run into this weird disagreement with every company that has ever sponsored me eventually, where we would get into this disagreement where, like, I would want them to keep sponsoring me, and they don't want to keep sponsoring
me. Dude, I've had that with, so, Fuji, and then I got with Gold.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to give you X amount of dollars every quarter. And it was good money.
Mm-hmm.
I got one check.
And then the next quarter came around, like, well, fuck, I guess I'm not getting paid. Yeah, it was bad.
That's why we went and posed Will. St. Louis-based company.
Adam's a stud.
We can show up at Adam's house if we need
to. Dude, I will always rep his stuff. He's a good dude.
Yeah, I agree.
Man. I like Adam a lot.
I just had him on the podcast and talked about all the different stuff that's going on with him post Will. Definitely growing. Definitely glad to be part of a company that actually likes us.
Yeah, you know? Awesome. Yeah.
Anything you guys want to say to finish?
Man, I don't know.
Great. If you want to learn jiu-jitsu, come to Revive.
Yeah.
Unless you want to train in like the nicest place in the country, Revive. Granite City, Illinois.
Go, all right. You know? Yes.
If you want to be weak in St. Charles, you
want air conditioning, go to Revive. Drink Revive coffee.
If you want to grow a beard, look like Nick Sanders.
If you want to be 200 pounds plus, just roided out huge humans, come to Revive.
Jacked, bro. The all super soldiers, man. That's why I go to Revive. It's like, man, this is the most physical training that there is.
Everybody there is at least 200 pounds. I think our gym average has to be 200 pounds.
Yeah, and 6'2".
Yeah, I feel like a midget there.
I know. I look like a little kid training with all the Revive guys, you know, taking a picture.
Well, they keep on getting bigger. We just had that guy come from another gym. He's like 6'6 or 6'4. He's enormous. Enormous, though. Like Gracie Baja guy.
I'm never going to Revive again. I'm never going again. So how do you get Revive coffee? Somebody, we've given enough plugs to it.
Come to the gym or you can buy online at revivebjj.com. You can come to Revive and buy it. And I'm going to bring some to Josh so he can sell a head nod for me.
What?
Yeah, I just decided just right now.
All right. Sweet. And why isn't it head nod coffee then?
He wants the money up front.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a Revive brand. I think looks better than head nod for coffee.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. I like that.
But if we're selling drugs.
If I'm going to start a backyard fighting league, bare knuckle, I'll call head nod.
Okay. I think that's probably right, pretty good. Right? Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh, for having us.
And that is the episode. Thank you guys for checking this one out. Like I said, I will tell you guys where we're at with the how to master any position in 6 weeks course and with the beta testers that I've been having. And so I will, mention that. But before we get into that, just make sure that if you guys have not been checking out the YouTube channel, this is the time to get in. It's the time to get subscribed. We have been putting out so much content, probably 2 different technique videos a week that are full-length videos, and then just a ton of different shorts. Just a ton of things to help you get better at jiu-jitsu more efficiently and more effectively. And it's just totally free on YouTube. You can go to the Josh McKinney BJJ YouTube channel if you have not been checking that out. But then also, I told you guys that I have been working on in my own jiu-jitsu and that I have been working on as a product the course Master Any Position in 6 weeks. And this is actually the first course that I ever developed. I developed it. I actually remember writing it down in a notebook on our way to vacation one year, our family vacation. We were on a plane and I just had my headphones in and I was thinking about what I had been doing and how I could kind of systemize it to help my students get better faster. And I did it and it worked. And now fast forward years and years of us just really making this method a culture in our gym, and just like how we kind of train of having focuses and being able to get good very quickly. I decided to turn that into a podcast and turn it into a premium podcast. And so that won't be available for a while, but I kind of needed some people, because I've never had it in podcast format. I needed some people to go through the course. And what we would kind of do is document their journey through the course and see if they not only get better at what we choose to focus on, but they actually can start to create habits of getting really, really good
at jiu-jitsu in general without needing their coach's advice, without needing my advice, without needing anyone's advice. And so really just want to teach you that skill of jiu-jitsu progression. And as it goes right now, I saw two spots of the four that were available for that beta tester. And so, yeah, if anybody wants to get in, you have to make the decision, I think, in the next 2 weeks, because I have everybody that has paid set up to, like go by March. And so if we're going to knock it out and let people be able to jump in on this mastering a position in 6 weeks course, I think it'll probably come out in the summer. Yeah, I have two spots available. And so if you guys want to get in on that, you absolutely can. And the best way to do that, just send me an email, josh@simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com, or send me a message on Instagram, @thejoshmckinney, and I will be happy to kind of tell you guys more information, tell you guys pricing on it, and answer any questions. And maybe you guys could be my last two beta testers on this course. And maybe you can just get better than everybody at your gym and smash everybody, and then become a mat bully. And then I'll have a really good segue to start to focus on like podcast content about how to deal with mat bullies. And so, yeah, we can do all that, but we can only accomplish it if we get two more beta testers to work on this course. At this point, I feel like it's time to end this episode. I've been rambling for a little too long today. Next week, we have, I'm not totally sure, it might be a Devin Parada interview, it might be another solo episode. I think it's going to be a question and answer, but regardless, in the next 2 weeks on the podcast, when the Devin Parada episode comes out, it is absolutely 10 out of 10. And I even asked Devin, just for you guys that are still listening, after I told you to stop listening to this episode, I even asked Devin at the end of that episode, towards the end of that episode, about the Nashville Open incident. And that was the first time we've ever actually discussed what happened. And so for those of you who have been loyal to the podcast, you know what I'm talking about. And so there is a little bit of drama, but just so much good content on training and really balancing how to be a hard, or how to do hard training and how to not do hard training. It's funny because he gives me credit to certain things, but then I'm asking him questions about like, oh really, tell me more about that. And he's like, yeah, it's like you say on the podcast. And I'm like, I never said that, but yeah, let's keep going on this. Let me keep learning too. And so it's really fun. Just that dynamic of that episode. We just got to discuss some ideas in depth. And so I think you guys will really like that. And now I will officially stop rambling. Hope you guys have a great day. Hope you guys get better at your jiu-jitsu with focusing. We talked about it all last week. And then I hope that today's episode helped you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.